This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi, I'm Tanya, and I am interviewing Mark Perver on pulsars and double pulsars. So, Mark, what are pulsars?
That's quite a big question, so I thought I'd start off with how they form. They come from very massive stars larger than our sun. So if you go right back to the beginning, you start off with a big cloud of gas that collapses into a very large star. And we're talking something that's perhaps 10 times the mass of our sun. These live for perhaps 10 million years, which on a timescale of stars is quite short. They sort of live fast and die young. They're very big, they're very hot, and they quite quickly run out of the material that they're fusing in their cores to produce energy. And once they stop producing heat, gravity causes the star to collapse. And eventually you get to a point where right in the core of the star, the protons and the electrons in the atoms are actually forced together, and you end up with a core that's all neutrons. It's this neutron core that ends up as the pulsar. The rest of the star kind of bounces off it in a supernova, a huge explosion. And then all that you're left with is this very small, very dense core, mostly composed of neutrons, packing together something like the mass of the sun into a ball that's about 20 kilometers across. So it's incredibly dense and very, very hot as well. The way that we see a pulsar as opposed to just a neutron star is quite unusual, and it was quite unexpected when it first happened. The neutron star is sort of a giant magnet with a north and south pole, and because it's become so compact, it's spinning very quickly, perhaps several times every second. And this rotating magnetic field causes particles to be ripped off the surface of the neutron star, and these are sort of funneled to the magnetic poles, and they then emit mainly radio waves. So you have a sort of lighthouse effect where you have these two magnetic poles and a couple of radio beams. And as the pulsar spins, the radio beam happens to sweep past the Earth. And so we see a very regular train of radio pulses, and that's why we call them pulsars.
So how are double pulsars formed then?
A double pulsar is something that's formed when, instead of just having one star on its own, it has a companion. So you have two stars in a binary system. That means they're going around each other. One of them then experiences a supernova and ends up as a pulsar, with the other one still going around it. It then actually starts to sort of consume the other star. It starts dragging the mass right off the outside of the other star. And that makes the pulsar that's there first spin faster and faster. So it ends up going around maybe hundreds of times a second. And then sometime later, the other star, which is also massive, also has a supernova and also becomes a neutron star. So then at the end of it, you've got these two neutron stars going around one another, one of them spinning really fast and one of them spinning a bit slower. And in the case of a double pulsar, of which we only know of one example, both of these neutron stars have radio beams that sweep past the Earth, so we can see these two pulsars together in the same system.
Could the force between a double pulsar, could they ever collapse and cause a black hole?
Yes, and we think they will in about 85 million years from now. So it'll be a while. Because they're orbiting very close together, they go around each other about every 2.5 hours. So they're really, really close together. But they're both very massive, slightly bigger than the sun, each of them. And according to Einstein's theory of relativity, that means that the system should be giving off gravitational waves. They're described as like ripples in space-time. And they carry away energy from the system. So gradually, the pulsars spin closer and closer together, and eventually they will coalesce. And at that point, it's not quite certain. You may just get a bigger neutron star, but it's possible it'll tip it over into something that's so massive that it will just completely collapse into a black hole.
So what is general relativity?
That is another quite a big question. But essentially, it's a theory of space and time and gravity. In the theory that we're more familiar with, which is Newton's theory of gravity, space and time are like this stage on which events happen, and the space and the time themselves never change. But in relativity, space and time are things that can be curved, and distances and times between events can seem different depending on your frame of reference. And specifically in relativity, it tells us that objects curve space-time with their gravity, and this is why other objects then are influenced by them. So relativity is telling us that all mass is actually curving space and time around itself.
So back to pulsars. What's the biggest and closest pulsar to the solar system?
The most massive pulsar that we know about we think is about 2.5 times the mass of the Sun. The closest one is a different one. There are a couple of pulsars that are about 500 light years from Earth. That's about 100 times further away than the nearest star. It's a similar distance to many of the stars that you see in the sky.
So what kind of mass and density are pulsars and double pulsars?
The double pulsar, because of its special characteristics with these two pulsars going round one another, we've been able to measure the masses quite accurately. So they're about 1.25 times the mass of the Sun and about 1.35 times the mass of the Sun. Elsewhere, the lightest, if you like, pulsar that we know about is just a little bit less than the mass of our Sun. And as I said, the heaviest is about 2.5 times. So there's a bit of a range there. The density is something that we don't know that well because theories of matter that we have aren't extensive enough to tell us exactly what is going on inside a pulsar. A typical density, if you can get your head around such a number, is something like 1 billion metric tons per cubic centimeter. I can't really get my head around that. It's something like 10 times the mass of all the people on Earth crammed into the size of a teaspoon. So it's really not something anyone can imagine, I think.
How rare is a pulsar or a double pulsar?
We know about approximately 2,000 pulsars, and they're all within our own galaxy. We think that there are pulsars all throughout other galaxies, but they are too weak at the moment for us to detect. In terms of double pulsars, where we can see two pulsars in a binary system, there's only one that we know about, and that was quite a lucky find. People hope to find more of those, but at the moment there's just one out of the 2,000.
What kind of waves does a pulsar emit in the electromagnetic spectrum?
Well, they emit, if you take all of them together, quite a wide range of different frequencies. We mostly see them in the radio spectrum, which is low frequency. That's how we pick them up at places like Jodrell Bank with a big radio telescope. But there are some pulsars, they tend to be either young ones or ones with a really very strong magnetic field that emit at much higher frequencies. So there's some that can be picked up in visible light, quite a few in X-rays, and some even in gamma rays. So that's way up much higher in the electromagnetic spectrum.
So what colour are pulsars? And
that is a good question. I'm not sure anybody has really thought about what colour it would be to our eyes. The reason is that being very hot, they're thought to be maybe 1 million Kelvin, which is about 1 million degrees centigrade. They would mostly be emitting X-rays. So we wouldn't see very much coming out of them at all. I suspect that they'd be emitting roughly equally over the visible range, so they'd probably be a dim, whitish colour, perhaps a little bit blue.
How long does each pulse usually last?
Pulsars rotate between about 700 times every second for the fastest ones, up to about once every 8 seconds for the slower ones. Within that, you don't see a pulse the whole time. You tend to see it for a certain fraction of the pulse period, maybe something like 5% of it. But if you have a pulsar where its spinning axis is aligned with its magnetic axis, and that happens to be pointing towards the Earth, you can see it for sometimes almost the whole pulse period.
So are pulsars dangerous to us on Earth in any kind of way?
Well, they would be if there was any nearby. Fortunately, there aren't. There's none near enough to us to be dangerous at all. But if you had one where the Sun was, it would be a bit of a hazard. As I explained, they emit a lot of X-rays, so you really wouldn't want to be near that. They also have streams of charged particles coming off them with a lot of energy that you also wouldn't really want to be in the way of. In terms of gravity, if they were at the distance of the Sun, we would feel their gravity similar to what we feel from the Sun. However, because they're so small, you could get very, very much closer to them than you can get to the Sun. And if you did do that, if you got to the surface, you'd be experiencing a gravitational force of something like 100 billion times more than what you feel at the surface of the Earth. So unfortunately, you'd very quickly become part of the neutron star.
So when was the first pulsar discovered?
That was in 1967. So they've only been known about for around 40 or 45 years now.
How do you monitor and find these pulsars? So what kind of telescopes do you use?
Mainly radio telescopes. There are places like Arecibo and Jodrell Bank where we use very large metal dishes to reflect the radio waves. When you're looking at the higher energy ones, there are some space telescopes that look at pulsars, such as Fermi, which is a gamma ray telescope. And there are X-ray telescopes also in space, like Chandra and XMM Newton.
How do you calculate the rate at which a pulsar is spinning?
Well, there's a whole technique for timing pulsars, which means measuring exactly when their pulses arrive. So to begin with, of course, you don't know how fast a pulsar is spinning. And quite often, you can't actually pick up the individual pulses. It's only when you average many pulses together that you can actually see the blip of the pulsar. So first of all, you start off by guessing many different values for the rotational period. And if you see something at one particular period, then you've found the period of that pulsar. And then after that, you go on timing it, adding the pulses together with that period and looking for when they arrive.
Are there a lot of scientists out there that specialise in this kind of astronomy?
There's not that many, actually. I think there's about 50 that would maybe call themselves pulsar astronomers around the world, and perhaps another 50 that would say that they work on the theory of neutron stars. So altogether, maybe there's 100.
How aware do you think that the general public are on pulsars and astronomy in general? And is there anything that's going on to support this, like summer camps?
I don't know of any pulsar summer camps, although it sounds like an interesting idea. We try and let people know about pulsars and what's going on in astronomy in general. I think that pulsars themselves, people are quite aware of them because there's been things that have been named after pulsars, like cars and digital watches and stuff. So I think people have a bit of an idea about that. In terms of astronomy, you can go to places like the Museum of Science and Industry if you happen to live in Manchester, and they have events like Meet the Scientist or things like that where you can ask questions of astronomers. Or, of course, you can go to the Jodrell Bank Physicist Centre, where you can see 3D movies and you can also talk to astronomers in the Ask an Astronomer sessions. A lot of universities do have outreach programs where people will go and talk about their subject in an informal sort of setting, and there's quite a few people doing that in astronomy.
So what kind of basic level do you think is needed for the general public to understand about pulsars?
I think to understand it on a basic level, you don't really need to know anything before you start. I don't think you need any particular mathematical knowledge. A lot of the numbers to do with pulsars are something that no one can really get their head around anyway. Obviously, the more levels of education you go through, the more deeply you can understand it. But I think to appreciate what they are, you don't need to have any prior knowledge at all.
Oh, thank you for answering my questions.
Thanks.